The following presentation is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by Layla Rudyard Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. We hope you enjoy the following presentation of The Sabian Symbols in Theory and Practice, Part 2, by Dane Rudyard. The presentation is 38 minutes long.
Now, what you actually became aware of was that the type of psychology which was taught in those days, which dealt with purely conscious factors, will, reason, imagination, all that, you had all those things nicely formulated as to this mean that and this mean that, and it's all, man is a rational thing, man's as an individual soul, God-given soul, and he's in control of his destiny, total responsibility, and so on. Well, when you are dealing, of course, with insane people or semi-insane people and all that, you begin to wonder a little bit about many of those nice categories. And so, at the same time, you are completely depending on the idea that all reality is essentially physical. Nothing can have any value unless the sense tell you, or the machine, which your sense have to interpret and your mind has to interpret, show you what the thing is. So any proof has to be done in terms of the physical senses and the physically connected intellect. But when you are dealing with practice which leads you to those very strange things that you find in psychosis and in dealing with primitive cultures and archaic things, and you take them seriously because you begin to realize that what you find in some cultures and you find in psychotic people are very closely connected, then you have to find an explanation. And the explanation is, of course, the simplest that you can have is that there is something beside the purely rationalistic field of human intelligence and human soul, and that is a big sphere which then you call the psyche. And the psyche, you don't know very much what it is, only you know that it is a good term to explain everything that you don't know, you see. Because it has a reality. It is no use to say it has no reality, because obviously it has a reality. I mean, you are dealing with it in a very serious manner. So it is real, but at the same time, it is not physical. And somehow you have to find a way of coming to terms with it. And so you try to find, to establish, rather, categories which link a series of phenomena which happen to seem to have the same root, the same meaning, the same basic background. And so if you see that certain things happen, not only among some of the patients who are going to certain process, which sometimes can be very positive and can, some other times can abort and be very negative, you find that you similar kind of images are produced in all culture, in myths and so on. You realize that therefore there is a realm of image which is beyond the rational, but still is very basic. And you said, and then there is a psyche which deal with images. And those images are very fundamental, and sometimes they are very powerful, and you have to be very careful with them, because whether you like it or not, they tend to overwhelm you and to overwhelm that little consciousness of yours, which you think is so wonderful, but it is so so susceptible of all sorts of trouble. So you see, you build there that situation where you say, well, it's no use to speak of a God, no use to speak of metaphysical thing, because if you take them as a completely spiritual thing, and in the Western way of saying that there is no connection really between spirit and matter, therefore we being material, we have no connection with them. So what is the use to talk about them if we have no connection with them? We can't experience them, we can do nothing with them. You see. So, if in the contrary we realize that those things are really our way of interpreting badly certain psychological experience or certain thing that happened in that mysterious realm of the psyche, you see, then at least we can to some extent deal with them and we give them name. And of course, by giving them names, you learn how to cope with them. You know, that the giving name of the thing is a very important thing. It's the basis of magic. It's the basis of all civilization. You name a thing, and therefore you know how to deal with it. I mentioned before, you name the tiger, you name the mad dog, you shout the name, and everybody around knows what it means, and therefore you can deal with it. If you, the modern science does exactly the same thing. The modern medicine, unfortunately, has named all sorts of disease as entities, you know, and say, oh, measles, oh, arthritis, oh, stroke. And you name those things, and immediately all the people in the hospital rush together, something like that, and you have an operation, or you give a certain thing or other, and you know how to deal with the situation. You see. So, then you name the thing father, complex, mother, complex, you call it in a name. You have strange things that happen, and you don't know why they happen, and it doesn't seem to happen according to the regular idea of a cause and effect, I do this and therefore that happens, then you don't know how to do it and you find another name, you call it synchronicity, and that's fine. Now, if you call it synchronicity, of course, the word chronos means time. You say that it is a meaningful experience that happened at one time, at the same time to several people or in several events come together in one field of experience which are related in some way, but certainly cannot be called causally related, as cause and effect, and then, of course, you have to find some way of explaining that. And so the only way you can say is time. Well, time is a mysterious thing, the vis occulta, the occult power of time, and so everything is based on the occult power of time. And so you have there, you see, all the things that you said about it. And he, I don't know exactly whether Wilhelm agreed with it or not, but he said the science of the I Ching is not based on the causality principle, but on a principle hitherto unnamed because not met with among us, Westerners, which I have tentatively called the synchronistic principle. And he said, my occupation with the psychology of unconscious processes long ago necessitated my looking about for another principle of explanation, because the causality principle seems to me inadequate to explain certain remarkable phenomena of the psychology of the unconscious. I found that there are psychic parallelisms which cannot be related to each other causally, as for example in cases of the coincident appearance of identical thought, symbols, or psychic conditions. Another example would be the simultaneity of Chinese and European period of style, a fact pointed out by Wilhelm. They could never have been causally related to one another. Of course, that doesn't make any sense at all, because the fact, I mean, yes, it makes sense in a certain sense, But the point is that, sure, there was a magazine, a French magazine, Planète, which published a remarkable series of things called The Metamorphosis of Humanity, which every book was connected to one century. And they would take how the arts manifest during that century, not only art, but various forms of culture and travel and all that, all throughout the world at the same time. And they have photographs of all sculpture and all that showing that the same pattern, the same kind of, not exactly pattern sometimes, but in some cases, but the same insistent emphasis of certain basic idea of space or goal focusing image, portraiture, and all those things occurred everywhere at the same time, in the Mayan, in the Chinese, in the Gothic, anywhere, you see. So showing that humanity evolved at the same time. But the curious things, you see, about these things is that why did it never occur to Jung to think that humanity is an entity, and that therefore that the planet is an organic whole, and therefore, you see, that it is obvious that everything that happened in terms of the development of humanity as a whole will have certain characteristics which are identical to all the culture at the time. Each culture, because of different geographical conditions, racial characteristics, fauna and flora, will give them a different, superficially different expression. But basically, they are obviously the same because it is the development of a process which affects humanity as a whole. It is so obvious. And yet, you or no European people ever thought of it. I mean, until recently. Because, you see, the thing is so focused on the idea of the individual. The individual person is a unique phenomenon separate from every other phenomenon to some extent. A culture is a unique phenomenon. Spengler, who wrote just before Jung wrote those things, said that every culture is absolutely separate. No culture, no man of a culture can understand basically another culture. There is no relation between two cultures, something like that. Each one is a separate phenomenon that occurs and develops. And that kind of individualistic thing is so entrenched in the Western mind until very recently. And where it is no longer entrenched, unfortunately, it is so on the basis of something very vague and mystical, which was the way in which Asiatic, particularly Hindu and to some extent Chinese, minds operated on a purely subjectivistic and internal manner, instead of considering the planet as a whole and humanity as a whole. Now, this is also understandable because, of course, the people, though in India there was a concept of the planet as a whole, and some of the avatar carrying the planet on their back and all those things like that, still the cultural separativeness of the Hindu thing was still so strong, and China, of course, each one absolutely proud of their own thing, that they were the culture, you know. Every culture in the past is always the culture. The center of the village is always the center of the world, you see. And that attitude is so strong still in humanity today, and it's still so strong in an individual psychological sense, you see. That to think of that we are little entities, little whole, WHO, within a larger whole of which we are part, is something which is still very difficult for people to understand. They are perfectly willing to relate themselves to God because, you know, that you never will meet God, really, in a certain sense. If it is an absolute thing, create whole universe and all those things like that, it is absolutely transcendent, it's all-powerful, it's always there, it always is there. It's an entirely different level. You can't experience it. You can have a feeling that you are communicating with it in mystical experience, but it's a purely subjective feeling. objectively, you are not going to meet him in the street, you know, except that you believe that you are a Hindu, believe that an avatar is the actual manifestation of God. And then everybody else says that he's a manifestation of God. I am God, you know, it's a basic principle. I mean, Alan Watts says, I am the universe, and so on. But it is a purely subjective, mystical kind of experience. But you see, that doesn't explain quite things which have to do with very concrete kind of manifestation of psychosis or images and all that. You have to find a concrete kind of thing. And so the concrete, the only concrete thing that you could think of, you see, is the psychic. There is a concreteness there, which we don't know exactly what it is. If we try to materialize it, make it physical, of course we just simply materialize it, and that's not the point. We are dealing there with something which has its own nature and its own character, and very powerful. And in fact, human psychologists kind of go in worship to other archetypes and all that. It's like all people worship image of gods, you see. But the point is then that if you are trying to use that kind of concept to interpret the things like the Sabian symbol or the I Ching, and to claim that the reason why you get a certain hexagram is because of the quality of the time, and that, as it says there, as the moment is, so do the runic stick, you know, the stick of the fall. So, but the thing to me which seems to be very strange, again, is how does it not happen to you to think that if 100 people all over the world at the same time were throwing the sticks, they probably would never get the same hexagon. And the thing which is even more curious to me is that with all that very experimental kind of approach of Jung, they never tried to show it. It would have been so simple to to telegraph to people all over the world, and you said at 5 o'clock on that day you are all trying to throw the stick in answer to some question which you think is valid for you at that time, which would be very difficult. And it would have been very interesting indeed if they all had the same hexagon. But it's most unlikely that would be the case, you see. And why nobody ever thought of trying the test is more than I can understand. But then nobody ever tried to do the simple things. I have for 40 years I have told astrologers, and at one time it would have been fairly easy to do it, relatively easy, try to get 100 people in a place like Paris or London or New York who were born on the same day at the same time with the same shock. And I mean, 40 years ago, let us say, before. And have social servants, people interrogating those people, because particularly in France, all the births are recorded, and people didn't, before the First World War, the Second World War, especially, people didn't move hardly ever, And so it would have been, especially after the First World War, because there was no place to live in, so that you could follow easily, relatively easily, it would have taken some money and a group of people, of course, to have the life, curriculum of life, even if it were a dozen people. Of course, the more the better. But even if you could get a dozen people and show they are exactly the same chart, and the point is, what a person, an astrologer who met those people at the age 15 or 20, could have said from those charts that would have befitted the event of their life, according to that. Now, obviously, they had all different lives, and you can say they had different background, and different ancestry, and so on. Okay, fine. But then what is it that astrology can tell, then? You see. And I refrained suspicion that this thing, nobody ever took my advice, and which, of course, I couldn't do it. I had no money, I wasn't well, and it's impossible for me to make any such kind of research. You would have had to have a kind of foundation or something like that. I feel suspicion that everybody is scared to try to experiment. You see, because it is, again, you find the same situation, you see, like the Sabian symbol, where you say, okay, now, I have, you find 10 people, 100 people who have the sun, let us say, in the 10th degree of Libra. Well, okay. Now the sun means something in their life, their vital forces, their energy, their whatever it is. And that thing, supposedly, is characterized by the meaning of that symbol. Well, obviously, their whole life, vitality and many things in their life are completely different, even that could be related to the sun. So how can that the meaning, the essential meaning of that symbol apply to all those different cases? You see, that is the problem. But to do it well and significantly means to change really basically your whole approach to yourself and to your life and to human life in general. What you have to say, to believe in, is that you are part of humanity and there are certain number of basic functions or role that you can play in that organism of things. It's like if you are a cell of the body, you can be a cell of the liver, or can be a cell of the heart, cell of the brain, or cell of the kidney, and you have different functions because you are part of the different cell. Well, you have a different chart, you have a different set of symbols, and therefore it established what kind of level or organ or type, basic type of activity, which means basic type of consciousness also, which it is your dharma to operate on. So that you have to begin to lose a little bit your egocentric things that I am one, I want to do my thing. And unrelated to any functional activity, to a larger whole, which is humanity or your culture or your community or whatever, larger whole you can actually and effectively function in. Whether it is a small community that you can only function actually and effectively, then that is to you the greater whole. If it is your nation, it is the greater whole. If it is the planet as a whole, then it is the greater whole. But you see, it takes an entirely different kind of basic approach to life. Now, what I want to stress is that, you see, it is that basic approach that you have to take implicitly, whether you like it or not, if you want to use the Sabian symbol intelligently. And so that you are not trying to do it in a literal sense, you are not trying to do it in a way which you just simply look at that and say, oh, well, terrible, my son is on this thing, oh, there's something about automobilists racing and the automobile is destroyed by a train, oh, that's terrible. And you have to try to understand what is involved in it. And maybe there I will tell you next afternoon. Take all the elements of it and reduce the thing to some very simple, basic principle. You may have a life where your main problem at a certain level, if it is Mercury is there, the main problem in your mind is whether you should follow a strictly personal, individualistic approach, regardless of any consequence, or whether you should try, in the contrary, to try to fit more into the collective pattern of life of your culture, and the symbol tell you, well, if you don't do it, if you insist on doing your things and all that, look out. There's nothing dangerous inherently about it. There is nothing dangerous if you have the sun in the first degree of Aries, that you are going to fall back in this ocean with the seal. But it will tell you now, look, this is at the stage of development that you are in at a particular time. Now try to understand it and interpret your condition of life in terms of that. And that can be very significant. You know? Because if you have your son, let's say, in the first degree of Aries, my former wife had it, then you know that you have to understand that your main basic problem in terms of your spiritual purpose and the energy that you are using is that to be sure that you are trying to do the job of emerging out of the thing, and that the possibility of falling back into the common level and all that is always present. This is your one of your basic problems that you have to face. And that you simply tell you this is one of your basic problems. Or if you throw this thing as an oracle, and I show how it can be done in the last part of my book on the Sibian symbol, two cards, which is a very simple way of doing it. Then again, you have to interpret the thing in terms of the situation. Now, what is happening is, you see, that because you are part of a larger whole, humanity and so on, you have individualized out of it by the fact that you are born as an individual, you are creating a certain situation which is bound to cause tensions and problems. Any emergence as an individual is going to cause problems. And the reverse side of the emergence is the solution of the problem. In other words, it's like molding a statue. You have a mold and you pour the bronze into the mold. And what is the inside of the mold becomes the outside of the finished product, you see. Or if you have coin, there are two aspects of the same coin. The problem and the solution are two aspects of the same thing. So all what you do is that you face yourself, you try to relate yourself to humanity as a whole, or to God, if you want to put it as the intelligence or power of the planet, or whatever it is, or your master, if you are Theosophist. And you say, please, I am stuck. There is a problem that I don't understand the situation of. There are too many unknown and unknowable factors and all that. Where does that situation belong in my life? And then you throw the things and you have a symbol which will tell you, well, that is the meaning of that particular situation. Don't ask, should I do this or not do it, because that's a bad way of doing it. Because you are trying to surrender your responsibility. What you do, you want to understand is what the meaning of the situation is. If you say, should I take a trip, for instance? Well, the point is not to ask, should I or should I not take that trip? But what you want to know is to understand what is the meaning of that trip. Is there any danger involved in it? Is there a test that you must take? Or is it perfectly fine because it's a beautiful possibility? Or, I mean, you know, anything like that. Then you have to make your mind. If you see there is a test of strength, well, and am I willing to take the chance or the risk, or am I not? You know, the symbol doesn't tell you what to do. It says that's the situation. Now you have the way, the possibility of choosing. And that is really where the free will of any human being resides. It is not in the kind of event that come to their life, but in what they do with it. It is the meaning that you give to an event That is where your freedom resides. And therefore, every degree of the, every symbol of the Sabian symbol can be interpreted in a positive or a negative way. You can either release it in a most positive manner, the meaning of it, or in the contrary, you can do it in a negative way. And that's your choice, that's your responsibility. Yeah?
You said Jung didn't get bring together the idea that the whole human race was a whole organism. Is Teilhard somebody who starts to take that concept from the, into the next step, the idea of the earth being a psychic, or he uses language which again doesn't really mean a hell of a lot, but it suggests another.
Well, I think Chardin is has certainly a very remarkable mind and an expansion of consciousness. The trouble, of course, or it's not the trouble, I mean, the fact is that, of course, he is typically Catholic, and he didn't want any more to give up or surrender his Catholicness than Jung wanted to give up his position as a reputable psychiatrist. So that if you, in other words, you have to appeal to your particular community in a way which is understandable to that community and which therefore can affect it. And so Teilhard chose to remain in the Catholic Church, and not only for his personal reason, because he had swore to do it and so on, but because he probably consciously or unconsciously realized that by that doing that, he was able to help the broadening of the Catholic spirit, which he did, you see. And so also the same thing with Jung. By retaining his empirical approach to some extent, anyway, and he managed to not be completely laughed at by all the psychiatrists of his time. Though, of course, to some extent he did have that also. And the danger, of course, of doing that, of I wouldn't say playing down, but you know what I mean, playing down to one's environment or one's profession, is that sometimes one doesn't really convince them, and at the same time one loses a little of one's integrity. So there's a difficult balance, you know. Another question?
Yeah. In your book, The Astrological Houses, yeah. You mentioned an idea that each, that there's a celestial name that is the real name of each person, and that name can be found in the birth chart.
No, I didn't say that. That's very funny. I don't remember exactly the sentence, but people always have a tendency to misunderstand me. I said the chart as a whole was the celestial name. I didn't say there was a name to be found in the chart. The chart, the birth chart is your name. I mean, a name after all is a combination of letters, you know, in a certain order, where a birth chart is a combination of planets in a certain order. So a birth chart is exactly like a name, you see. And it defines the way in which the different potentiality, the different functional activities in your total person are integrated or potentially integrated for a particular purpose. And of course, that's the basis of numerology, is that the letters of the name have a very basic meaning, and that you reduce them to numbers and so on, you can get a characteristic pattern of the life and character of the person. And sometimes it works remarkably well. I have had a numerological reading from people using completely different systems, and just as good, if not better, than any astrological thing that I have had years ago when I was starting. Why it works, it's even more complicated to understand than astrology. But there again, you are dealing with the cultural factor. You see, you are, a name is given to you because you are part of a particular culture, family, and so on. And so the name helps you to give you a sense that you are an I, a personal entity separate from other. You see, that is true. Being given a name that a child really begin to realize that he is I myself separate from other people.
Oh, have you ever done any research or thought very much about how subliminal advertising uses symbols, cultural symbols? Have you ever tried to fit that in with your ideas? Subliminal advertising, the art of using symbols to evoke an unconscious response.
Oh, well, sure. No, I am not a researcher.
There would be some parallel, of course.
Well, sure, you can use what you are doing there is that you are trying to develop in an individual person, in a potentially individual person, a mass reaction. Mm-hmm. And the mass reaction manifests through the symbol of that particular culture.
Right.
If you want, for instance, to have your opponent not elected instead of you at the next election, you tell them he's a communist, you know. So immediately, or if you don't do it, you imply by some kind of trick advertising or something like that, you see. So that you immediately are pushing that great image of the American unconscious, which is being communist, you see. It is obvious, you see, that there is such thing as unconscious things. The trouble only begins when you are speaking, like Hume does, of the collective unconscious. You are making it an entity. You see, what happened, harder, is the same thing that you have in the eye. I see you like that, but it is only through the center of the retina and the little yellow spot, which has a certain kind of cause, but I am able to differentiate between the very delicate change, difference between the features and all that. You see. Now, what we call the conscious is the yellow spot of your psyche, you see. It focuses the thing in there in a clear way. But the point is that there is no such thing as an unconscious. Anything out of that focus is more or less unconscious. You see. There are things just next to the focus which become slightly conscious, but very most of the time not too much so. And then as you go further away, you get less and less conscious until you are completely blind, you see. And that is a much, to my mind, a much more constructive way of looking at it, you see. It is not that the conscious emerges out. It is that there is the light of consciousness is brought through a mind which is limited. And it has to be limited, because it is the only way it can get clear-cut images. And so, the growth of consciousness is to expand that focus and retain its clarity at the same time, you see, which is, of course, very difficult. Well, I think, really, we should stop now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is the end of the Sabian Symbols in Theory and Practice, Part 2, by Dane Rudjar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudjar Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudjar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudjar at www.rudjarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudjar, visit www.rudjaraudioarchives.com.